If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away will save our kids from the killings? But you're pro-choice, abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. But we are all the same, we are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake. Oh no, the forecast said that there'd be snowflakes. Whoa.
And Wide Right Turn coming back at you. Joe Bird Joey back on the air with Tom Kelly. And we're going to cover some stuff today. We probably won't have time to get into all of it. But as we well know, the 2024 legislative budget session is closed. Governor Gordon has signed, vetoed, or line item vetoed all of the bills. And we got quite a bit of stuff to talk about. So we're going to go ahead and call this Fallout Budget Session Edition Volume 1, because I'm sure there's going to be more episodes in the future covering all of the rest of it. But with that, we're going to do what we normally do. Get to Mr. Tom Kelly, see how he's doing tonight, and see what he has on the top of his list, and we're just going to tear through it. So, Tom, what's going on with you, bud?
As you were saying, where do you even start with this? It wasn't just a matter of deciding to sign bills or veto bills or line item, but even bills that became law, there were like long tirades and complaints and letters and mind-numbing insults on some of these things. And I know that people who support the, let's call it the Freedom Caucus side of things, even though it's not just purely the Freedom Caucus, are feeling a little frustrated. But you should feel encouraged by the fact that we have long-term traditional Republicans very, very upset about this last session. They complain about the typical things that liberals will complain about: lack of civility, lack of respect, we're not doing things the way we're supposed to do, whatever. But they're not talking about the substance of these bills very much, because the substance of these bills were very popular with most voters in Wyoming. And one of the first ones that comes to mind is, I grabbed all my news from Cowboy State Daily. I know we've got the Casper Star Tribune. I know we've got Wildfile. I know we've got the Independence Network, but of course, I go to the mainstream media, what your average person is getting fed who really doesn't follow politics and they think this is objective news. But I go to Cowboy State Daily because, let's face it, at least providing both voices when we have these two sides going at each other, even if they're framed in certain ways that make the Freedom Caucus look like the bad guys, at least we get quotes from what the Freedom Caucus had to say rather than just these op-ed pieces from like Wildfile, which just talks about how horrible they all are. So the first one is from Mark Hines. It's called Gordon Vetoes Bill to Repeal Gun-Free Zones in Wyoming. This passed the House and the Senate with veto-proof majorities. And it was amazing this bill didn't die in committee, but it wasn't for lack of trying. There were it was actually the Wyoming caucus and their ilk. There, we could use that word too. The Wyoming caucus and their ilk were the ones who used procedural measures and committees and assignments and rules to try and kill this. But it made it through. And the quote from the story is what Governor Gordon said when he vetoed it. He wrote, House Bill 125. Enrolled Act number 49 erodes historic local control norms by giving sole authority to the legislature to micromanage a constitutionally protected right. Huh?
Yeah.
Micromanage?
Well, hold on.
The idea of the bill.
Let's get into that, because you kind of pointed out micromanage. But what I point out is the fact that he states we gave local control, and then he ends the sentence with, to manage in any way, whether it's micromanage or not, a constitutionally protected right. If it's a constitutionally protected right, why would there even be local controls on it? It's a universal God-given right. It doesn't say at the end of the Second Amendment, shall not be infringed unless by your local school board or town council. So he's, again, I love pointing out the hypocrisy and the contradictory verbiage these individuals use when they're just BSing to get their way. Sorry, go ahead and continue.
You're right. There is, and I have more quotes because some of this is just like laugh out loud BS. The way it is, the verbiage of it, it's a whole lot of platitudes and nothingness. But the idea of micromanaging a constitutionally protected right, the right to bear arms, the Second Amendment, as the listeners know, was originally that the federal government couldn't abridge the right to own firearms. But the Supreme Court later extended that and said, no, it means no government, state, local, can abridge that right. So this idea that somehow we can let the local governments decide if they want to allow to have guns or not. I mean, Wyoming already has in statute a state law that overrides. Imagine it's going to be the town of Laramie because that's where the university is. And they decide we're going to ban guns here. They can't do that according to Wyoming law. So the idea that we are going to micromanage it because it merely says you can carry concealed weaponry to or concealed firearms to protect yourself and those around you, and your rights to self-defense don't disappear just because you walk into a place where, well, frankly, the left says guns shouldn't be. But, of course, they don't think they should be anywhere except for the hands of police and the military, and then they complain about the police and the military. So I think they don't want anyone to have guns except for left-wing police and military. But it's an evidence that, and you go into the story, the governor was supported by Moms Demand Action, which is a gun banning organization. Their ultimate goal, their gun safety laws, are gun confiscation and disarmament of the population, so we'd be defenseless like in the UK or Australia. And Governor Gordon got a huge high five from the Wyoming Democratic Party. I mean, doesn't it just says it that right there? When you have the Republican Party, the moderates, the liberals, and the conservatives, and anyone who's not a liberal is far right, I know that, joined together with a veto-proof majority, and he gets his support from the Democratic Party and a radical gun banning group in the state of Wyoming, it tells you all the nonsense we need, right? That's all you need to know, that this is complete nonsense. And we could go into this bill even further. I understand even the argument could be made that he doesn't like the idea of local school districts getting overruled on this.
There's that.
Wyoming has a law now.
For sure.
Yeah, school districts can pick and choose right now if they would like their teachers to be allowed to carry. And some districts do opt for that. Very few, unfortunately. Because we know typically people who get in charge of government jobs and education, we know which side of the spectrum they come from, and they tend to be very much afraid of guns. So I can see that. That's a fair argument. I don't agree with it, but you could say, well, we have some school districts that would like to allow it. We have others that don't, and I don't believe the state should be overriding that. But politically, that is a valid argument. Constitutionally, it is not, because you are not allowed to locally infringe on constitutional rights. That's by definition. But the other one was the idea that you could carry firearms into government buildings where they're currently banned. Well, who else but the state can decide if you're allowed to carry firearms on state property? That was just a complete smokescreen on that one. I saw that one, and when we come back to the special session later, but I was absolutely amazed that, first of all, we got the ban on gun-free zones was killed in the previous session, and then this year it passed resoundingly despite procedural moves by the minority left to stop it. And, well, the minority left, unfortunately, seems to hold the governor's mansion, too, and he threw down a veto. It's almost a desperation because typically when you have a lead executive and there's a veto-proof majority, they don't grandstand like this. The thing to do would be to just let it pass into law without a signature and say he objected to it. But now we're going to have to bring people back to the Capitol to pass it again, to override the veto, and then read all the news stories about how they're wasting taxpayer money. But, before, you know, I'd like to hear your take on what you're thinking about what happened with this, because I don't want to get so much into guns necessarily. What I'd really like to get into is what's going on with the educational system, with DEI and parents' rights, because that is really where Wyoming is in danger of losing liberty from the ground up, I guess you could say, or from our roots, or basically, as I've warned people on the campaign trail, we don't need to have people come in from California and start out voting conservatives. And you're welcome for those of us conservatives who came from other states to help bolster and reinforce you. But if they train our own children to vote liberal, progressive, socialist, it's all over anyway. We'll just die off and our kids will come in and this will become the People's Republic of Wyoming. And then the Wyoming we know now actually won't exist.
And the kids will be none the wiser. They've never known any different. This is what they've been spoon-fed from day one. But without getting too much into guns on this one, the only thing I'll say is if you have a candidate that's in front of you that's signing all these pledges saying, I won't vote for this, I'll support this, you need to take it all with a grain of salt until you have a voting record in front of you. And when you have a voting record in front of you, you need to hold them accountable, whether they're up for re-election or not. And I say that because in 2018, when Governor Gordon was running the first time, he signed a Wyoming gun owners survey saying that if a repeal gun-free zones act was put in front of him on his desk, would he sign it? He gave an unequivocal yes. So it's another example of candidates who are going to lie during the election season. And then when their feet are held to the fire, they have the opportunity to act on what they've told you they're going to do. They will come up with some squirrely BS excuse, or in a lot of cases, they won't even talk about it. They'll just do it and ignore it and deny their voting record. But in this case, Governor Gordon really can't, because it's a single individual killing an entire bill. So that's really where I wanted to go, just on the gun side. Even if you have someone says, I'm pro-gun, if you can't get them all the way down to being pro-liberty and Second Amendment, which has nothing to do with hunting or necessarily having guns, it has to do with personal protection and defense against tyranny. If you can't get a candidate to fully convince you and then prove it with a voting record, hey, Governor Gordon deserves every ounce of crap he's got. And that's going to be the kind of common theme here, is how far to the left Governor Gordon has gone now that he is a super lame duck. The Harvard thing, and actually it goes back to even before his second election. You know, I've got articles from 2020 when he said things like, we're going to have to abandon rural Wyoming and small towns because the rest of the state can't afford to keep up with their infrastructure problems and their water and their roads. And then he puts in his veto letters, we need to be fiscally conservative and considerate of our smaller communities. And it's a never-ending series of contradictions and BS from this guy. But what you said when you opened, and you repeated it a couple times, and I want to explain to the listeners what a veto-proof majority is, because technically by the numbers, yes, the people that ultimately supported House Bill 125 and many other pieces of legislation did so in numbers that if the governor vetoed it in a certain time frame, it could come back to the legislature and each house could override the veto. That only happened once. Bills that were passed early enough that the governor signed and then line item vetoed a couple and outright vetoed another made it back. And the only one they had the successful series of votes on to override any of the vetoes was, of course, on the budget for the legislature itself, which is a separate budget. Not surprising that they could find a way to make sure that they got their money for their special furniture and whatever upgrades they wanted to their portion of government. But it started in the very beginning. The amount of time that was wasted, the way things were scheduled and calendared, the committees that certain bills were sent to, the order of merit or importance that those committees put those bills in. It's all part of a, I hate the word process because it was used so much this term, but a process that can be calculated to say, if we do it this way, at very least if it passes, we won't be here long enough when the governor vetoes it. And that's what happened to House Bill 125. They wanted to make sure in the Senate that they got the chance to have a full Senate vote on that. So they brought it back from the dead when that committee spent all that time going out of their way to kill it. I believe it was the Judiciary Committee on the Senate side, Kel Case slapping Bill Landon on the back and laughing his ass off about, haha, we killed more, Second Amendment liberties for the people. We have that sound clip here on the Independence Network. But what that did was put it in a process where it had to pass both chambers, and it did, with that what you call veto-proof majority. Those numbers were there, but it got sent to the governor after the final Wednesday of the legislative session, which meant the governor had 15 days to veto it. And he knew, and a lot of the people that didn't really want the bill but voted for it anyway knew, they would not be around in order to override that veto. This goes back to that sense of whether your candidates or your representatives are really supporting the legislation or the actions that they campaign on, or that they say they, you know, share values with we the people or the voter or the principles of the party on. We are going to have a call for a special session. I just saw another message from our good friend Ken Pendergraf saying, please pray for us. A lot of the legislators are working very hard on calling a special session to address some of these veto issues. And what you're going to see is this veto-proof majority, these individuals that voted for a lot of these bills specifically to cover their own ass in the upcoming election, saying, I voted for a gun bill. I voted against this. I did that. Look at the record. And it is official record. They won't support the special session because they know that they can now blame the failure on something they actually wanted to kill on the governor, who can never, you know, be up for re-election as governor again. So it's kind of a gimme across the board. That's why we keep talking about things like the process, the timelines, when people put stuff in their desk. Now, we're getting better on the conservative side at pulling things from the mouth of death, you know, digging up the grave and opening the coffin, getting things out of the desk. But there still is this known timeline and process to kill a bill or allow the governor to do it and not have the ability to come back and address it. And so I think we really need to get down to keeping an eye on who's voting for or against this special session if a proper vote comes up. Because when these individuals run for office, the question isn't, did you vote for the gun bill or did you vote to repeal gun-free zones? The vote should be, or the question should be, did you vote in support to have a special session to make sure that legislation that you passed was actually honored and the veto was overturned? And that's where I think the focus is going to need to be here in the next 6 months.
Oh, absolutely. Because you'll have people who may have voted against said bill in committee, but then when it went to a full floor vote, voted for it. So when they ran in their primary, they could say, well, yes, of course, I supported that law. When these politicians, and I don't mean these elected officials, these are politicians, and politicians are people who will tell you whatever they need to have and increase their power. That's what they do. Like you just talked about Representative Pendergraf. That man is not a politician. That's a man who genuinely believes that he was blessed by God to represent people who think like him. And he looks at his talents and abilities, and he is by trade, he's a construction man. He builds things with his hands. And now there he is fighting in the arena of ideals and founding principles of the country because that's what he believes in. Trust me on this. I know Ken firsthand as a friend for several years now. He would rather be spending time with his grandkids than doing what he's doing down in Cheyenne. But he looks at it from the long view that he has to fight for the future of his grandkids in this state. So that's how he sees it. It's very important to him. That's not a politician. A politician will stand there and tell you things such as the bills that maybe they voted against that you liked. Why are you against this issue? I'm actually for that issue. But the bill that came up, and then fill in the blank with a bunch of bullshit about it was a bad bill or the courts were going to just strike it down anyway. That is absolutely insane. I mean, that was one of the, I don't want to go off into abortion, but he talked about the, he vetoed the abortion regulations. And I understand based on the ultrasound, because now we've got mandated healthcare, which is a whole different argument. But he went along the route of like, well, there's going to be a court challenge. There will never be ever in this country a controversial issue or bill that is not challenged in court in some way or another. Even if the thing is black and white with no gray area, you will find some activist attorneys who will go venue shopping for activist judges to go to court on that. So if they say it's a bad bill and we were going to get sued, or it didn't do this, or even worse, they tell you just don't understand. That right there, that means they have no argument whatsoever. So they say, I could explain to you, but if I have to explain, you wouldn't understand anyway. I just love when somebody whose IQ is 30 points lower than mine calls me an idiot. I really, it's like somebody standing there 5'8" looking up at me saying, wow, you're short. Really? Okay. Hey, whatever your viewpoint is. But I want to move on to this. Like you were saying about the special session. Let's stay on it for a second before I move on to the DEI. Watch who says they're not going to have a special session. They will have their excuses about how it's a waste of money, about we already did what we did. This is not meant to be a full-time legislature. Well, they've got prior engagements. Well, they need to spend time with their family, like why Cyrus is retiring. Those are all excuses. And I think Joey's hit the nail right on the head here, that they ultimately voted for these bills knowing they would get vetoed, knowing there would be no chance to override the veto in the regular session, and knowing there would be no special session. And now they could put on their campaign flyers what they fought for, talk to them about the bills they actually voted against, but find out which of these members of the House and the Senate who are running for re-election said no to the special session, and you will have the people who never wanted the bill to pass in the first place. So you'll at least know who you're voting for.
Yeah, and back that up and augment it with any candidate, and you might have to do a little research, and we'll try to get a list together with sound bites and actual news clippings, but in any of the races that may appear on your ballot, look at the candidate and see if they've ever said, or especially recently, or currently saying, they're in agreement or support with Governor Gordon on anything, because that should tell you all you need to know. Whether you vote for the special session, whether it even comes up for an official vote, however you voted as a candidate, fine. If you're an incumbent right now or a candidate that isn't currently in office and the phrase or the posture leans towards, I agree with or support Governor Gordon on these, you know, key controversial issues, then you do not need that person representing you.
Well, let's go on to the next one. Gordon vetoes legislature's defunding of DEI programming at University of Wyoming. This was Cowboy State Daily. Claire McFarland wrote the story. Here's the quote. Because it was a line item veto. He didn't veto the entire thing, but the substantive part was actually vetoed. Without this targeted veto, the legislature will have inadvertently put millions of dollars of federal grants that regularly flow to the university at risk. Well, there you go. We needed the money. I've been warning about this for years. Forget what the people of Wyoming want. Forget the values we would like to instill in our children. We need the money. That's what it comes down to. But they go even further. The proponents of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is the complete opposite. It's the polar opposite of liberty and individual rights, because it views everybody as groups, not as people, not as individual people. They say, we don't understand. Oh, I understand. I have been working in education since the 1990s. I have a master's degree in it. I've worked at universities and gotten degrees in universities in the city of Chicago, the heart of where this cancer came from in education, where it really took root. I won't go back to critical theory or its offspring, critical race theory. We don't need to get into that. Because you notice nobody talks about critical race theory anymore. Now they call it CRT became DEI because it's even better than critical race theory. Because according to Miguel Cardona, our Secretary of Education in the United States federal government, quote, this is what DEI covers: race, color, age, national origin, sex, transgender status, gender identity, sexual orientation, pregnancy, religion, disability, genetic information, marital status, political affiliation, parental status, and those individuals from underserved communities. You know, they could have done this much more quickly and just said, able-bodied, straight, white Christian males need not apply. That's all they had to say. And it covers everything else at that point. But that is what they're pushing for at the university, whether it's critical race theory or it's the idea of underserved communities or it's the idea of gender equality, which includes men on women's sports teams and men in sororities. Never seems to go the other way around, guys. You ever wonder about that? Yes, because men tend to be predators too, not women. This was something that was vetoed when the legislature voted to defund the diversity, equity, and inclusion program at the university for good reason. But we don't even really need to get into what the issues are with this stuff that has no business being taught in a place of education, because it's nothing more than completely science-free indoctrination in political philosophy is all it really is, because nothing in the world backs anything that they claim. And when you break down actually, when you do actual statistics, when you actually go beyond simple correlations that they'd like to throw out there to prove that, you know, the United States is sexist and racist and transphobic and blah, blah, whatever you want to call it. Basically, they're saying, well, it's not Marxist, so we're not happy. Freedom screws up our plans to control everybody. That's the basis of DEI. So why did Gordon veto it? Well, he didn't stand up and say it's a good program and we need it. He even allowed a ban on the university funding a separate department of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is a good thing. That's fine. But we should get into like what Jeanette Ward had to say and what the university had to say about this too. But ultimately, this is what sticks out to me. It's the fact that Gordon, who I've spoken to personally, and believe it or not, I can read people pretty well logically. The autism gives me a tough time reading emotions, but not what people are thinking. And I don't think he believes in the DEI at all, but he believes in that federal money coming in.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. And let me break this down a little bit further. The first problem I have with Governor Gordon's veto is the fact that it was not only intensely fought for on the floor of the Senate as an original amendment to the budget, but it went through and survived two separate joint conference committees and then a vote of both chambers. So I don't know if that, again, would be a veto-proof majority, but it went through a lot of process, and this was the one of three major changes to university funding that actually survived. And then, just on the premise of the fact that it existed in the proposed budget going back to the governor, the Board of Trustees and the president of the university, Ed Seidel, had a trustees meeting and stated, we're not getting rid of DEI anyway. And that's not what the amendment to the budget said. It didn't say you can't have DEI. It said you cannot use any taxpayer-sourced funding for DEI. And basically what Ed Seidel came down to was, you know what, we'll just find a way to fund it privately because we want all this other money we're getting, which personally I still have a problem with, but it's the first step. Not spending our taxpayer dollars on this was the first step. There was no provision saying you had to get rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion at the University of Wyoming. That was the ultimate goal of with another piece of legislation. But they basically, and I think there was a whole article on it, Jeanette Ward and Sherry Steinmetz said, well, what the university is now saying is basically a middle finger to the legislature, because the intent of the legislative action through the budget was, this is what the people of Wyoming really want, not just the people in Albany County, who were the only people at that meeting. So the governor didn't have to line item veto this because he's already got basically public statements from the university saying, eh, we're going to do it anyway. We're going to spend our own money on it, which I think is great, because that means all this other crap that we waste money on at the university, we can start saying, well, it's your policy to just spend your own money on it, so why don't you do that? But it's equivalent. The defunding DEI and then the governor vetoing it is equivalent to Secretary of State Chuck Gray, when he's on the SLIB board, the State Loan and Investment Board, which is the top five elected officials, talking about how we're going to deal with the money and the investments of the state, saying we should not be investing in these ESGs. The environmental, social, and corporate governance type social credit score, your carbon footprint score, that type of investments that are out there. And it went back and forth for quite a few meetings. And then ultimately the suggestions that Secretary of State Gray made saying, listen, let's make sure we're not doing this because it's adverse to the economy in Wyoming because of our industries. Those were also vetoed unilaterally by Governor Gordon. So your statement is absolutely correct. Anything that kind of follows some of his policies, but even if they don't, he doesn't care. As long as he's getting his hands on some of that money, he's going to veto stuff. He's going to go lone wolf out in the woods and say, no, this is what's best for Wyoming because I say so. And we need to make sure we're bringing all that money in. And it's ridiculous because he keeps calling it federal money, and it's not federal money. He keeps calling it the state's money. It's not the state's money. This is our money. Where do you think the federal government gets its money from? Every time I open my paycheck, there's a line in there telling me what Uncle Sam took and gave to old Joe Biden there to kick back down to Marky Mark Gordon. So it's absolutely ridiculous. It's definitely a standard posture of Governor Gordon. The DEI program is not the only place he did it. And in this case, it's almost worse because the university already admitted, screw you, we're going to pay for it ourselves.
Well, where federal money comes from, yeah, it comes from our taxes, and it comes from the Chinese borrowing, and it comes from the Fed just creating it with the keystroke and just out of thin air. And they raid our bank accounts by inflating currency and prices. So the money we have is worth less because there's more of it out there. So there are many ways that federal money comes from, eventually does come from our hides. Back to this whole idea of the DEI and the university doing it anyway. I fully respect and appreciate a good middle finger every now and then. I have no issue with that. I am, let's not forget, I'm a long-haired Harley biker. I'm an 80s metalhead. I've spent my life with both middle fingers up in the air quite often. So when I see something like, well, the university's flipping us the bird because they're going to go ahead and do this anyway, I say good on them. The people running the university, if they would like to continue doing that, that's fine. I don't like the idea of the state coming to universities and saying, this is what you can and cannot teach. I'm all for cutting off funds for a useless department, another bureaucracy of people getting paid to promote diversity, equity, inclusion, which means basically going around and seeing what we can do to pick people for the university based on physical characteristics that have nothing to do with their capability to actually do the job. But if the university wants to teach this stuff, great. Let's be honest about it. Let's be honest about what it is. And if people don't want to go to the University of Wyoming because they don't want to be indoctrinated into this, it's their choice to go elsewhere too. There are universities out there, not in Wyoming, like Hinsdale University, which takes no federal money whatsoever because they never want the feds telling them what they can and cannot teach. But can you imagine someday my nightmare happens? I'm in the grave. My children are in this horrific socialist utopia. Wyoming's become just like New Jersey, Maryland, Illinois. Everybody's miserable. Taxes are up the wazoo. People have had their guns taken away from them. People are chopped and slopped and diced and spread about based on, again, and their physical characteristics, not what they can do or their historical adversity or whatever. They would like to say something happened back in the 1800s. So that's why generations later, and what I mean by something happened, somebody's going to say, oh boy, you're really downplaying slavery. I was actually thinking about Native Americans getting screwed by the government. But this idea that we have to make up for the past, that we're going to fix injustices of the past by committing injustices now, that's what that is. Now, imagine the remnants of the conservative movement, those people in rural Wyoming who are now fixing their own roads because it turns out it was the left that cut them off, not the right, of having infrastructure. And they open up a college, and this is where you can learn the great old philosophies of the founding fathers, where you can learn that George Washington actually wasn't black, like maybe they're teaching in the schools now, because we laugh about Google AI doing that, but I think that is really symbolic of how they're looking to change history going forward and rewrite it. AI will be at the forefront of that. Imagine the state coming forward now and saying, you cannot teach this political indoctrination that the founding fathers were heroic, brave, and intelligent. They are awful, slave-owning white supremacists, and they deserve the ground that they're in. And thank the flying spaghetti monster, because there is no God, that their ideals are finally dead. So the state bans a university from teaching how wonderful the founding fathers were. That is kind of what we're talking about doing here. We tell this university and the professors and the people in charge of the departments, the state comes and says, we don't like the crap you're teaching. Don't teach it. I'm all for pulling the funding on that garbage. But if they get private money, if they have students willing to pay tuition to get that, that's really not the state's business to step in and say the university can't teach that. Now, some people would say, well, they get state money, so they have to do what the state says. It's like, careful with that line of thought, because you have all sorts of institutions, private institutions even, that get state money. So can the state then dictate everything they do and say because they're getting state money? Private hospitals getting money from the government through Medicaid and Medicare. So can we then dictate exactly what, how to practice medicine at these places because they get money? So yeah, just to tail that up, I have no issue with the University of Wyoming continue to teach DEI. I've got huge issues with DEI, but that is just par for course in the universities in general now, including the university I work at, American Military University, but we've added a letter to it. We have a Department of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging, because people should feel like they belong. Often I don't, and well, who knows? One of these episodes eventually will probably get me axed from there, but oh well.
Well, we're not trying to make you unemployed because, hey, I don't like paying for your welfare, which I doubt you would take, but, and we're not trying to push you into that. And I hear what you're saying. This will probably have to be a deeper conversation on another show, but the state already kind of does say, because all of your trustees at the university and the president are appointed by the governor. So if the state already has a say, but it's a say that's coming from a unilateral source, a single source, one person, pretty close to absolute and arbitrary power, which is why I believe in term limits for chief executives, not for the legislature, because the chief executive is a single voice who can take unilateral action. We already have a little bit of that. So ultimately, what it's going to come down to is I would like to see the trustees of the university be elected publicly. I don't mind the defunding. I think some of the arguments being made are not legitimate because there was nothing saying they couldn't have it. I would prefer that the university have a better way of doing it than DEI, but we're not having the discussion because there was no bill saying you have to get rid of DEI, you have to get rid of gender studies. It said, we're just not going to waste taxpayer dollars on it anymore. And I believe that is a legitimate first step to getting where we need to go, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think the first step really is the end of the United States Department of Education, because that's where the marching orders come down from all this. And they do it, they control the trustees through federal money. Teach these harebrained left-wing policies and look at all this money you get. And that's what that comes down to. On the local level, something we've run into here, parental rights at the public schools. The local public schools are not as heavily dominated by the U.S. Department of Education. The U.S. Department of Education is essentially, believe it or not, a puppet of the National Education Association. The NEA existed before the U.S. Department of Education, and they were very instrumental in getting it created and being people who run it. And then we have the Wyoming Education Association is just the marionette puppet of the NEA itself here, too. So we do have that federal reach through federal money and that influence on curriculum through the universities. We do have that in the schools, but the nice thing about local school districts is there is more local control because you do elect people from the community, parents, grandparents, and then people with a lot of college degrees who have no kids who for some reason want to control the school. Never vote them in your local districts. I don't care what their credentials are. If they don't have skin in the game, they shouldn't be on the school boards. That's a different conversation. But we had the parents' rights bill. Gordon did allow that go into effect, but he called it superfluous and frivolous. What? Listen to this quote. This is fantastic. I never had any reason to suspect the schools my children attended or their teachers or the administration ever sought to interfere with my relationship with my children. I was, in fact, very involved with my children's education all through their time. Yeah, you know, parents who are concerned, the parents who push for these bills, we're the ones who are very much involved with our children. And my experiences, too, with my kids have generally been very, very good with excellent educators who had the best interests of my children at heart. But we don't make laws banning homicide because everybody's committing homicide. We do it because a very small percentage of the population would do it without that law, without that deterrent. So we see this now in the schools. We had the case out of Rock Springs where you had the school lying to the parents' faces, hiding the fact that they were gender transitioning a child here in Wyoming. And then we have the parental bill of rights going in there saying you can't do this. You have to let the parents know if there's a significant change in physical or mental health of my kid, you have to share with the parents what's going on. If that law was in place, what happened in Rock Springs probably wouldn't have happened if they realized what they were doing was illegal at that point to hide this from the parents. I mean, this is one of the few times Stith and I actually agreed on something. He was saying himself that the purpose of this law was to avoid stuff like this happening. One of these things that we say, well, it doesn't happen in Wyoming, and yet here it is again. But you're going to love this quote, Joey. This is what the governor wrote this to. Introducing supplemental layers of legislation may inadvertently give rise to confusion and unnecessary bureaucracy, potentially detracting from the overarching objective of facilitating parental engagement as well as ensuring optimal outcomes for our children. Wow, what a boatload of nothing. That took me three lines. That was one big run-on sentence that said nothing.
Well, it depends on how you look at it now. On its own, and based just on the fact that he wrote that as a reply to his allowance for the parental rights and education bill to go through without his signature, yeah, on its own, it doesn't. But remember, there was two parental rights bills. Both went through to the governor and became law without his signature. And they all focused on a series of things, not necessarily because they're not happening in Wyoming or they're happening a lot in Wyoming, but because they have happened and we have some issues, but also because there was other legislation on the floor, such as the funding for more mental health care directly for schools. Well, that raises a concern because now you're turning the school into the mental health care provider. There was also other things about vaccines and medical care of children in schools. There was a bill or a discussion on that, which would have allowed the schools to decide, oh, it's an emergency situation, we need to vaccinate your kid without your knowledge. So, yeah, I could see what he's saying, but not on this standalone issue. But if you look at all of them, ultimately, there was a big push in the state through the legislature to say, no, we are going to be the medical and mental health care providers for your children across the board from the time they go into now pre-K until, I don't know, they finish their master's degree, I guess. I don't know. And we don't ever have to tell you anything and we don't ever have to get your permission. That's what these programs were based on. And that's why these two parental rights bills were so important. So they're not ridiculous and they're not overbearing and they're not burdensome and they're not multi-layers of conflicting things. What they are is, okay, fine. If the legislature votes for or the school district decides to use money for these things, mental health, medical health care for your children, when they do those, they have to adhere to these rules. So I think it makes it more clear because there's so many programs that the school systems are engaging in that are not the responsibility of the school system. And we have evidence that they can choose and have chosen to cut the parents out of even informing them that there's an issue in the beginning, let alone they have begun treatment on your child. I think Governor Gordon is completely wrong. I'm glad the law went all the way through, whether it got his signature or not. That says more about him than the law. And again, it's another BS excuse of don't hold me completely accountable. And I have this series of standards and principles that I can't explain to you, can't prove to you what they are, and they change on a whim based on what I want. You just do better to shut up and tack more money onto the things that I can support easily. So you're right. It is a nothing burger in the end, but no, there was a good reason for this. And there was active attempts to increase the functionality of schools being able to do this stuff without you even knowing. Like I said, they don't even tell you there may be a problem with your kid in the beginning. The parents aren't finding out till the kid's halfway through some kind of treatment. And in one case, the Rock Springs case, it was gender transition treatment. That's completely not okay. So, you know, I'm getting to the point where I don't care. I've never really cared about the governor's opinion on things. And, you know, if he had any balls and any real beliefs, he would have actually vetoed this one. And then that would have been the thing that could have gotten us likely into a special session. I don't know that we have enough yet to get a majority to get us into a special session.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But I just look at that one statement and then I see that is politi-speak. That is using a bunch of buzz phrases that sound good and feel good to make it sound like somebody's standing on the correct side of an issue without talking about the practicality, like you just did. When you go up to somebody and you say, should we facilitate parental engagement? Should we be ensuring optimal outcomes for our children? Everybody going to be like, well, yeah, of course. Well, that's what I'm doing. But if you come to them and say, should we allow your children to get COVID vaccines without even you knowing about it, right away, people will just stand up and say, what the heck? No, absolutely not. That's the type of thing the Parental Bill of Rights was trying to stop. So when you counter it saying like, all you need to do is be involved with your kids and we're going to do wonderful things here for them and don't worry about all that. This is the substance that real people need to talk about, the actual repercussions for when we allow this type of autonomy for any government entity to just operate, especially with our kids involved. I don't understand why anybody, except for people who believe in the Hillary Clinton view of takes a village to indoctrinate a child, why anyone would want to overrule what parents do with their kids. Now, somebody at this point would say to me, aha, Tom, got you, but you're against sex changes for children. Yeah. Yes, I am. Yeah. I'm also against parents, like we said before, sewing their kids' legs together if they'd like to be a mermaid or something like that. There's a huge difference between raising your kid and there's a huge difference between abusing your child at that point. Parental involvement at the school and telling them that they can't check out a certain book or they don't want them in a certain program. I mean, Gordon even complained that some parents may now be able to deny their children from being in a special education program. So is that not the parents' right? Whether their child should be in a special education program or not. I've raised 6 children, and I've never had any of them evaluated for special ed. I've never had any of them evaluated for ADHD or autism or whatever label we could throw on them, because no matter what label we throw on the child at that point, the interventions are the same whether they have the actual diagnosis or not. So like my son, he's a chip off the old block. When they started telling me he really needs to be screened for autism, we have a great autism spectrum disorder program here and he really should be part of it. All I heard was, yeah, you want the extra money because you have somebody else in special ed. And that's what that comes down to also. Well, if we pull kids from special ed, then we don't get that extra federal money for kids in special ed. And that's what they try and round kids up into those programs. I've got former students in special ed who they'll talk your ear off about how they didn't want to be in them. Their parents didn't want them to be in. This is back in Illinois. And they were forced into these programs anyway. So this special session that we've got, Sherry and John calling for it?
Yeah, I've heard a few people talk about it, but yeah.
Absolutely. They need 2/3 of the House, 2/3 of the Senate. That'd be 42 votes in the House and 21 votes in the Senate. Property relief, Senate file 54, a property tax refund, basically, for those of us who got our asses handed to us with our latest property tax bills. It wouldn't even cover the amount that our taxes actually go up. It would just give us a little bit of a break because, as John talked about, they had like $700 million extra dollars sitting around they didn't need, and they were looking to give less than half of that back to the taxpayers. And the state's like, no, that's ours. We're going to stick that in our savings. That passed the House 61-1. It passed the Senate 29-2. This is what the people of Wyoming want. You had people of all political stripes voting for this at this point. And this goes even beyond re-election because we had some Democrats vote for this, didn't we?
Absolutely. You can't have one vote in each house against and have no Democrats involved. So yeah, it was supported on both sides of both sides.
Yeah. And the fact that got shot down is like, well, I signed the other 4 bills. The other 4 bills that don't affect the middle class in general. You have, I'm not against property tax breaks for veterans. I'm not against property tax breaks for older and disabled people. People have lived their whole lives here and their taxes went up when people like me moved in because property values went up. Sure, go ahead and blame me, even though I moved in before the great rush that happened after COVID. But House Bill 125, not quite the same margins, passed the House 54-8 and the Senate 22-7. So they can only afford to lose one vote in the Senate. But let's go back to the fact that we had two very popular bills that were supported to the point where people running for re-election who did not want to vote for them went on the record and voted for them because they knew what their constituents were going to do if they didn't. This is a golden opportunity to pass bills. People talk all the time about our democracy. Well, for a republic to function the way it should, it has to reflect the will of the voters as long as it's not violating the rights of the minority. Well, I don't think anyone's rights get violated when we get our own money back. And definitely nobody's rights get violated when we expand rights like ending gun-free zones. So I don't know how they say no to this. I'm looking forward, Joey, to hearing what their excuses are, how they're going to paint this for why we don't need it. The best I can come up with at the moment off the top of my head was that it's unnecessary and it's just going to waste taxpayer money. Forget the $700 million they got sitting in the bank account they don't know what to do with, but we can't have it back. At least we could spend it maybe on a special session.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I think that'll be one of the main reasons. Long before the call for special session on the veto issues, you know, Senator Ogden Driscoll had already made the statement of not finishing this budget and having us go into special session just for the budget will cost us about $100,000 a day. And I'm going to challenge his numbers a little with the caveat of, if you can lay it out for me, Augie, and show me line by line how it's costing $100,000 to bring the legislature into session, I'd appreciate knowing those numbers, because by my count, it's about $45,000 a day, which is still not great, but it's not as much as the big scary number he's throwing out there. Also, I kind of want to talk about something John Bear said in his article and his call for a special session of, we had more time on the calendar, they adjourned early. Yes and no. The calendar was set for 20 days. They stayed a whole 20 days. But because the general session last year ended 3 days early, the provision in the Constitution says you have 60 days for legislative actions. Those days can be shifted around. And then there's the provisions for special session. So technically they have three extra days of legislative work that, you know, you'd have to call a special session to use, that they could have said, hey, it's Friday, we've done 20, we're going to come in tomorrow and we're not leaving until Tuesday. And they still would have been okay. But now that the sessions are over, there's really no way to necessarily get those days back without having to pay the $45,000 to what Ogden says, $100,000 a day. And that's going to be their main sticking point of, it's going to cost the taxpayers too much. None of this was scheduled. We're already on to interim topics, and that may be the way it goes. So we're going to have to just watch, wait, see, hold accountable each individual that votes for or against it. Definitely stay all over the governor, stay all over the upcoming elections, and anybody that didn't support the special session, didn't support the right types of legislation, or shows any type of support for Governor Gordon, probably needs to lose some votes in the upcoming election, if not their seat. And I just don't see it happening. I think there's too many people that sacrificed what they really wanted to do for the voting record that'll get them reelected, that'll make them say, nope, I'm not going to reopen that Pandora's box and get held accountable. The governor overturned something I wanted to kill, and I still get credit for voting for it. I don't believe we're going to see a special session.
No, I don't think we're going to either. Is there a minimum amount of time that they'd have to have a special session? Because they essentially need two votes. That's it.
Any of that has to be established at the opening of the session itself. They normally would call it for 3 days, 5 days, whatever they call it for. But no matter what they call it for, and this goes into, we don't have time to do this, but this goes into convention of states, whatever they say they want to meet to talk about, or however long they want to meet to talk about it, doesn't matter, because that's the first thing they vote on is the rules and the standards when they get there. And they can change it. All they did in the COVID special session, it was supposed to be 3 days to talk about three bills, and it turned into 2.5 weeks and zero COVID measures got passed, and it cost us extra $4 million to the Attorney General. So there's no mandate, because they get to decide when they get there, if they get there, what they're going to talk about and how long they're going to talk about it for. So again, I think we're going to just have to put a pin in all this and get on to Fallout, Budget Session Edition Volume 2, and we will finish it up probably next week, because there's other bills to talk about, and we're probably going to have more things coming across the newswire. So make sure you're keeping your conservative values well shined up and expressed, holding accountable the people that say they represent you. And yeah, we may not be able to get the stuff that we could be able to do like a special session, but there's an election coming up, and the easiest way to avoid things like special sessions, stop electing jackasses. They're going to vote for liberal ideals. We'll help you get there. when you're making that wide right turn into the voting booth this year. So make sure you stay tuned here on the Independent Network, and we'll talk to you soon. And remember, whenever you see me and Tom on the side of the road, come up and say, hey, have a little chat with us, because we're not from the government, but we are here to help.
If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away will save our kids from the killings? But you're pro-choice, abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. But we are all the same, we are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake. Oh no, the forecast said that there'd be snow.